He's our friend, Mr. Chris Fedor. Chris, howdy.
Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. I feel like the Taylor Swift song was very appropriate, so good choice there.
We've been doing that all day. It's been annoying. It's been annoying.
Well, I'm assuming that some of the Cavs players are going to go home and listen to some of the 90s emo music from their iPads and stuff like that, too. So
that's probably, that's probably absolutely true. Okay, so let's just talk about the series for a second. Did they play so differently than they played in the regular season that it was overly evident? And if so, was it because of the injuries?
So I think the short answer to that is the injuries certainly played a part of it. There's no doubt about it.
Had to.
I cannot tell the story of this series and this latest playoff flameout without discussing the injuries that occurred in Game 1, without discussing everything that Darius Garland had to try and play through with his sprained big toe, without discussing, you know, Donovan Mitchell and how he was affected by the calf strain that he didn't want disclosed and the ankle injury that he had to play through in Game 5. Certainly. Coming into this series, it was going to be a tough test. Indiana was going to provide some matchup difficulties for the Cavs. I was on record saying that this was the team that was going to be most problematic for them, not named Boston, for a variety of reasons. I think they all played themselves out in this series. So you needed to be full strength. You needed to be the team from the regular season to compete with this team. This wasn't Miami anymore. You needed all hands on deck. You needed everybody to be fully healthy. You needed to stay true to yourselves. You needed to be focused. You needed to be tough. You needed to be physical. Like, you needed to be everything that a championship contender says it is and should be. And the Cavs were not. And certainly, the injuries played a part in that. The Cavs did not have the team for a majority of the season that won 64 games in the regular season. That, you know, obliterated the Miami Heat in the first round, that became the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, that was historically great, was top 10 in offense and defense. But I just don't think this is the kind of season where you attach excuses to it. I think this is the kind of season where everybody needs to take a harsh look in the mirror and determine what person that is that's staring back at them and whether that guy is good enough to win a championship and ready enough to win a championship.
Chris, this is not an excuse question. My question for you is the reality of the injuries that they suffered throughout the playoffs here and how much worse maybe are they? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. You know, Darius is not going to ever disclose this, apparently, because, you know, I think it would put the organization in a bad spot. But multiple sources have told me privately that Darius was initially given a timeline, a return timeline, when he re-aggravated his toe of about 4 weeks. Not the two, not the three, not the day-to-day thing, and certainly not questionable over and over and over again. About 4 weeks. And you know, he came back before that. And it was a very, very difficult injury for somebody who is built like him to play through, somebody with his particular skill set to play through against the fastest team in NBA history, against a relentless team that, on average, picked up the Cavs 53 feet away from the basket. You don't see that in today's NBA, but that level of pressure bothered the Cavs. That level of pressure took the Cavs out of their offensive rhythm. That level of pressure put a lot of stress on Darius Garland's toe, and it put a lot of stress on Donovan Mitchell's calf and ankle, and it put a lot of stress on DeAndre Hunter's thumb because of the physicality that they played with. And it put a lot of stress on Evan Mobley's ankle. He wasn't as mobile as he normally is. Donovan Mitchell didn't have the same lift on his jumper. Like, all of that plays into it. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think, beyond Darius, I don't think there was anything like the situation that we've had in the past where it's going to take a month, 2 months, 3 months for some of these guys to recover from their particular injuries. I think they just needed time to recover from them immediately and try to figure out how to play through them and they certainly didn't have enough time in between game one and game two, the game two that DeAndre missed, that Evan missed, and that Darius wasn't ready for yet.
Chris Fedor is joining us, and he covers the Cavaliers for the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. And if you've read his work, you know he's done a phenomenal job of covering this series. What's a bigger gamble for the Cavs front office? Making major moves this offseason involving members of the core four, or making minor moves and just tweaking things?
I think it's a major gamble anytime you make significant changes to a roster. And I totally understand that what happens in the regular season does not matter when it comes to the postseason. And there are legitimate questions about, are you a 16-game player? Are you an 82-game player? But this team did some good things throughout the course of the regular season.
A lot of them.
That I think if you take the emotions out of it, you have to recognize those things. You have to be able to recognize those things. Then you also have to ask the questions about, are their flaws correctable? Are the problems that showed up in this series against this opponent, Indiana, that might even go to the NBA Finals, guys, are they things that require a roster fix? Are they things that require trades? Or is there another level of internal improvement that can happen for this organization? It is too soon for me to be able to answer those questions, and I think it's too soon for the Cavs to be able to answer those questions. I think they need to take a deep dive into everything that happened in this series and then come up with what that answer is. But you just can't lose sight of 64 wins. You can't lose sight of 8 months of magnificence, right? You can't lose sight of top 10 in both offense and defense. You can't lose sight of a historically great offense. And the guys that are on this roster that they have decisions to make about, Jared Allen, Darius Garland, Max Strus, Isaac Okoro, Ty Jerome, they all played a role in that, right? They all played a role in the Cavs going into the Eastern Conference semifinals as a heavily favored team over Indiana. And they were favored in every single game of the series. Again, it didn't play itself out that way, but when you're having these kinds of conversations that require perspective and a whole bunch of nuance, because look, talent is very, very hard to come by in today's NBA. A two-time All-Star like Darius Garland is very difficult to replace, right? One of the best centers in the Eastern Conference, Jared Allen, for all of his flaws, is very hard to replace. So the Cavs are cognizant of those kinds of things, and that's a very difficult button for any organization to push. Unless you feel like what you're getting back in return is going to make you significantly better, and only they know the answer to that.
Chris, how hampered is the front office due to the lack of first-round picks? And all those names, you may as well just call them assets if they're trying to make any kind of movement with the roster, correct? And how restrictive is it going to be for that front office to truly be able to make a significant change if they needed to?
Incredibly restrictive. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people are going down the path of, okay, do they need to trade Jared Allen? Do they need to trade Darius Garland? Because there are salary cap ramifications, because this is a bloated salary cap that the Cavs are dealing with, because they're going to be an apron team, probably a second apron team. And with that comes a whole lot of restrictions. And we don't have to talk about it, but teams that have gotten to that point with their salary cap have made cost-cutting moves, even owners that have a whole bunch of money. Look at the Denver Nuggets. They traded away a key member of their championship core in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope because they simply couldn't afford him. You know, Phoenix is going to make cost-cutting moves because of the salary cap situation that they're in. So the new CBA is designed to keep these great teams with owners that have deep pockets from overspending to a level that creates an unfair advantage. That's the easiest way that I can put it. So the Cavs are going to have a financial decision to make on Ty Jerome and what they can afford and what they're willing to give him and how deep into the tax they're willing to go. because his $10 million contract or $12 million contract, whatever it ends up being, right around the mid-level exception, is going to cost this team, in its current state, about $70 million. That's a lot for Ty Jerome, who couldn't play in the first half of last night's game against Indiana. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be limited on the kind of players that they can bring in free agency. I think they're going to have hard decisions to make on their own free agents. And I think when it comes to, you know, potential trades and the caliber of player that they could acquire in any kind of trade, with the salary that guy is going to command, that's going to make it very, very difficult as well.
Chris Fedor joining us from PlainDealerInCleveland.com. Chris, if you're looking at this roster and you could add one thing, I won't ask for a specific name, but if you could add one thing to this roster for next year, what would it be?
Yeah, I think it's toughness, guys. I think it is. I think some of the guys on this team are just physically limited. And I just don't think they're physical enough and ready for what the playoffs require. I think it's unfortunate. It's very similar, I believe, to the conversation that we had a lot in the aftermath of them losing in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. There was a level of playoff readiness that the Cavs did not have from some of their most important players. And Donovan's never going to say this, ever, because he's never going to put down his teammates. But it feels like to me that some of his frustration and disappointment is the reality that he's at a certain level and he's ready to compete for championships. And some of the other most important guys on this roster, Jared Allen, Darius Garland, and Evan Mobley, aren't on that same level. They haven't been through the same things. They haven't experienced some of the things that Donovan has. They just don't have a mature enough game for what playoff basketball demands. And that's tough. But if I'm looking at trying to add something, I don't know that it's a specific skill set. I don't know if it's a specific archetype. I think it's just toughness. I think this team has a hard time with tough, physical, grimy opponents. Certainly Darius Garland does. Certainly Evan Mobley does. I think Jared Allen does too. And if, like, you don't have that kind of culture, if you're trying to create more of a culture of joy, that's fine. Other teams have been successful that way. But if that's the kind of culture that you're willing to create, you have to find a way to manufacture toughness. And I think the only way that you can manufacture toughness, given this roster that the Cavs have, is to bring in guys that are tougher. Bring in guys that are tougher and more physical than what you currently have on this roster. So you can match that in a better way than what the Cavs did 2 years ago against New York, what the Cavs did last year against the Orlando Magic, and what the Cavs did in this series against the Indiana Pacers.
What is going to keep Kenny Atkinson up at night until they start playing basketball again? Regrets that he might have during the series.
I think not having his team fully prepared for game one, I think that's something that's going to keep him up at night. I think it's some of the lineup and rotational decisions that he got wrong. I think that's going to keep him up at night. I think it's not being able to solve Indiana's pressure defense, picking the Cavs up full court, and how to get the Cavs, you know, into their offense, the free-flowing offense, the rhythmic offense that we saw during the regular season, like not finding a solution to that that allowed the Cavs to be comfortable enough to attack Indiana's defense. I think those things stand out to me more than anything. And then did he make the right decision leaning into the two big lineup as much as he did throughout the course of this series? Because I think there's a truth here, guys. I think Kenny Atkinson got outcoached. Now, he hasn't been in as many playoff wars as Rick Carlisle. You can talk about the chess pieces that he had available to him in this chess game. But I think he got put into checkmate a little bit earlier than a lot of people anticipated. And, you know, part of the reason why they brought in Kenny was for him in the postseason. His X's and O's, his adjustments, his tactics, just his acumen that was supposed to translate better to postseason success. And he got outcoached in this series. So I think, you know, part of their inexperience, I think that's attached to Kenny Atkinson too, because he just hasn't been in some of these playoff wars. He hasn't seen a lot of these things. He hasn't failed at the playoff level to the same level as some of these other teams that the Cavs run up against. And I just think, you know, Indiana turned out to be the better team, but I think they broke the Cavs. I think they broke the Cavs' identity. I think the Cavs lost their identity, certainly, but I think Indiana played a role in breaking it. And I think part of that is tied to Kenny Atkinson, certainly, and some of the coaching maneuvers that he made and he didn't make. You know, you can't blow 19-point leads at home. You just can't. You can't blow a 7-point lead in 57 seconds on your own home floor, fatigue or not. You can't do that. You have to find a way to prevent that from happening as a coach. You can't have your team ill-equipped going into game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Just can't happen. You can't have them looking as if they were checked out in Cancun for game four and you're facing the largest playoff deficit at halftime in NBA history. Like, those things are a reflection of the coach, at least partially. And I think he's going to have regrets from this series. And unfortunately for him, despite how great he was during the year and racking up all the individual accolades, like every single Coach of the Year award that is known to man, and there are a bunch of them, like, he won them, and rightfully so. But I think he would be the first person to say that he wasn't good enough for this team in this matchup against Indiana.
Chris, we enjoyed your coverage all season long. Love having you with us and looking forward to what you write during the offseason and what you share with us when you join us here on The Fan. Thanks,
man.